Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Now, I was actually saying a little bit earlier that I don't think we are well socialized and ready for all these water restrictions. Because, I don't know, we're just not there yet. We're just not there, or maybe we are there, but it's a problem. And according to Daily Maverick, a seven-page letter from Johannesburg Water to city manager Floyd Brink on the 14th of October reveals that water throttling, that's a new word for us, water throttling or new expression, and pressure controls, which slows water to a trickle, are being introduced as the city's water crisis deepens. On Monday, the Constitutional Court said it had been unable to conduct physical or in-court cases because of the unreliable water supply. Now, we know this. We know this has become a problem. And just as it does become a problem, so there's always a solution. Well, maybe not one specifically to this problem, but we're going to talk about it. We are joined in a studio this morning by Professor Noam Weisbrod. He's a professor of hydrology at the Zuckerberg Institute for Water Research in the Jacob Blaustein Institute for Desert Research, that's the BIDR, at Ben-Gurion University of the Negev. Professor Noam Weisbrod, good morning. Welcome to Chai FM. Welcome to South Africa.
Thank you. Good morning.
Is it your first trip?
No. I've been here before several times.
Several times. Okay, fine. And so then why haven't you solved the problem? Why are we having water throttling if you've been here a few times and clearly there's solutions?
I did. You just didn't notice.
Because we're being throttled. All right. Well, yeah, maybe somebody is throttling, but not the water. Let's talk about that. So first of all, tell me about your area of research.
My area of research is contaminant transport. Mostly in the subsurface, different type of contaminant. It starts from different type of micropollutant, goes through pesticides, radionuclides, gas, greenhouse gases, and stuff like that. But in the last 6-7 years, I'm the dean of the Desert Research Institute, so I'm basically in charge of the research that is being done by around 70 professors, 70 labs, research groups, which means that on average, let's say that on average, each group has three ongoing big projects, which means more than 200 running projects at the Institute at every given moment. So
that's incredible. So water research is obviously, I mean, we know it. They say the next war, well, it's that they said that, but it wasn't true. The next wars were going to be fought about water. We know that this is that we have a responsibility and a need in the world to make sure that we look after the resources that we have and that we, you know, that we utilize them as best we can. I saw that one of the comments here in South Africa, especially in Johannesburg, is the amount of water that is lost between the reservoir or between, you know, source and the tap. And it was, I don't remember the number, but it was ridiculously high. Would you say that that is one of the more important areas?
Yeah. Leaks in water supply systems, it's definitely a major problem. Of course, it's not the only problem. It's a superposition of many things. And I think that the first step should be to really understand and accept the fact that water is a commodity and it's something that we need to treat as a commodity. It's a precious commodity. Mm. It's an unstable commodity. And therefore, we have to invest all the time to make sure that we're not facing a crisis that is bigger than what we already have. And all predictions by the World Bank, by the UN, are talking about a bigger and bigger crisis. So the things are not going to get better. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have to invest a lot. And invest means not only money, but also invest in research, in education, and so on and so forth, because otherwise, I'm not sure that we will be able to fix what's going to be here in 10 or 20 years in terms of the water crisis.
So if you were advising Johannesburg, What would be the main headline areas to focus on, and how could the crisis be dealt with?
Well, first of all, to be honest, I'm not an expert on the Johannesburg water problem, and I know a little bit, but I should be very careful. As a scientist, I'm trying to say the truth. I know it's not very common for a politician or stuff like that.
What are you talking about? what is this science nonsense? Yeah, we work on feelings. No, I get that. I understand. But I would also imagine that the challenges faced by Johannesburg are not particularly unique. We always like to think we're special. We're not. So I would imagine that there are common challenges throughout the world and throughout cities in the world when it comes to water.
So first of all, just for example, I mean, there was, to remind you, there was a huge water crisis in Cape Town about 6 years ago. Sure. It was almost to a level
day
that
zero.
There were, day zero. So and then a few good years in terms of rain came and everybody forgot about it, but it this is the nature of people. So I think that the first thing to remember that we can argue about climate change, but we know that there is extreme climate instability. And and this unstable conditions with droughts and floods and extreme changes in temperature and so on and so forth means that our water resources will be less and less stable and less secure.
Right.
So we need to think about it in advance. And I think that Israel is in a way a good example, because until 2004, we didn't have any desalination in Israel.
So wow, is that recent as that?
Yeah, yeah. Everything was, well, excluding the city of Eilat, it was a different case.
But yes.
And now, 20 years later, more than 75% of our water is from desalination.
Right.
So this is a big, big difference in only 20 years. And by the way, in a few years, it will be almost 90%, because there are two new big desalination plants that are currently under construction. And that pretty much disconnecting us from
the climate
because
reliance
the water is coming.
Climate.
Yeah, exactly. So this is just one example. Another example from Israel is wastewater. Wastewater is a resource, and we are using 90% of our domestic wastewater for agriculture, for unlimited irrigation. And this is, again, a big thing. So out of every 10 drops of wastewater, 9 is being reused. So that's, again, a game changer. More than 60% of our water in agriculture is from treated wastewater. These are just two fast examples of how we can manage our water resources and plan ahead of time in order to control it and make it more secure, safe, and stable. So I'm aware of the fact that not everything that work in Israel will work in South Africa. South Africa is about 60 times bigger than Israel.
Well, I was just trying to think. We need to find a sea. Can you think of anyone who's prepared to let the ocean go for us? No, I mean, we're far.
Well, you can move to Cape Town.
We could. We could. Yeah. And it is beautiful. But
No, I mean, so your point is very good, because it's not one solution. It's a superposition of many, many ideas, different solutions, different approaches. We know that most of the water is actually being used for food production, crops, irrigation. So if you invest in your irrigation systems.
Yeah, your drip irrigation versus your regular type of old-fashioned irrigation.
But this is a big investment. So again, once you are thinking of water as a scarce commodity, and with no doubt it's the most important resource on earth, we can't live without water. Water is life. There is no food security without water. So if you think about it this way, and if you invest, and if you are using the knowledge, and there is a lot of knowledge, not only in Israel, not only in the Zuckerberg Institute for Water Research in Israel, but in other places as well, a lot can be done better. So I think you have to team up And we have to team up and work together. And I think that there is no magic solution, to be honest. There is not like, you know, you're joking, but how come that you didn't solve the water problem of Joburg?
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
I know it was a joke, but I mean, it's a long process. It's an expensive
process.
It's a
mindset. Yeah, in a mindset. Way, and we do need to go to ads. Mukundi is sending me all sorts of rude notes. But the reality is that sometimes a bigger problem is healthier, is better. In other words, the fact that Israel is in the Middle East with significantly less water, less rain than we have here is probably better because it had Israel had to find solutions in a different way. Here, we have a crisis in Cape Town, then it starts raining, then we have the luxury of forgetting about it. We live in Johannesburg where we do have a reasonable amount of rain, but so it kind of puts it at that dangerous level of sometimes worse is better because you find a solution. We'll be back just after this. It is 8:48. I'm Howard Feldman. We are chatting to Professor Noam Weisbrod from Ben-Gurion University of the Negev, talking about water and some of the solutions available to us here in South Africa. Give me your thoughts, 061-895-1019.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
It's 8:50. I'm Howard Feldman. A very good morning to you. Thanks for joining us in studio. With me this morning is Professor Noam Weisbrod. He is from the from Ben-Gurion University of the Negev. He is the involved with he's a professor of hydrology at the Zuckerberg Institute for Water Research. And so your trip to South Africa, is this research? Is this sharing your knowledge, sharing options? What's the goal?
Everything you mentioned, plus learning. For me, it's also learning because I need to further understand the problems in order to try to do some brainstorming and think what can be done and how we can work together. I'm visiting both communities, investors, and universities. There are very good universities here, both in Cape Town, in Joburg, and in other places. Of course, I'm not visiting everyone in this trip, but some of them. And we are, you know, thinking how to collaborate, how to work together, how to do things that are for the benefit of South Africa. And they're going to be a win-win situation. There is a lot of knowledge that accumulated in Israel because we actually suffer from water shortage from our establishment in 1948. The first Prime Minister, David Ben-Gurion, actually constructed the National Water Carrier that was for many years the largest construction project in Israel. And a lot of people thought that he's crazy, but bringing water from the Sea of Galilee all the way down to the Negev.
But it changed. It completely changed Israel.
Totally, totally. I mean, I cannot even think how it could be without it. I mean, we're talking 60 years ago, way before climate change became a buzzword and everybody's, you know. So.
But as you said, it's irrelevant whether, you know, your feelings, again, always back to feelings and science, but your feelings about climate change, not climate change, the reality is water is a scarce resource. And we've got to look after it, not contaminate it, not lose it along the way, and use it in the best possible way. And those are all of the ways in which it has to be addressed. How is the, and I mean, obviously the elephant in the room, the issue around you being from Israel, how has that been impacted? Has this been a concern?
I have no clue what you're talking about.
Okay, well, now, that's good to hear. Moving on then. No.
Well, I think, again, I mentioned before, I'm everything but a politician, so I'm not going to talk about politics, but I can say that everyone I've met with was extremely friendly, and people really want to cooperate and really want to work together, both academics at the universities and people in the investments. And obviously, not in this trip, but in previous trips, I was also visiting like rural villages and places that
Well, really those are the areas that unfortunately are suffering tremendously. You know, it's the standard situation in South Africa where we have an electricity crisis. People that can afford it, they install solar, and they found other solutions to it. If there's a water crisis, before we know it, there'll be more and more boreholes around, and it's not regulated, so everybody can be drilling in their backyard and filling their JoJo tanks with water if they can afford it. It's people who can't afford it that are the most greatly impacted by any form of crisis like this.
Yeah, but you know that if people that can afford it will drill a borehole in their backyard, in a few years you will be in a crisis that you cannot even imagine, because the water level going to go down, and you will need deeper and deeper boreholes and things like that. So if it's not going to be managed.
I saw the panic in your face when I was talking about that. He was picturing, I can tell you, the professor was picturing this everybody just sucking up water from the water tables. Am I right?
No, I'm just saying that the solution to the water shortage must be good management. It's not like you have a water problem, you can solve it by yourself. So just do it. It's more complicated than that, right? Because you know, at in Israel, it's funny because we are a very small country, and it's very clear that the water doesn't know where the borders are, borders between countries, and then there is always the issue who owned the water stuff like that.
Of course.
So
It's how long does it take? You know, you're speaking about these desalination plants in Israel, more and more being built. How long does it take to build a plant? And I know it's a silly question, because it's actually not about the plant. It's about changing the mindset. It's about all of these things you've mentioned. But I'm just interested practically in November the 18th is day one, and there was a real focus on managing and changing our approach to water, how long should it take before we start to see a tangible difference?
I think it can be quite fast, not a matter of days, but a couple of years. If you manage to overcome all the regulations and debates and all that. But once decision is made, there are a lot of technologies on the shelf that can be very useful and very helpful. And exactly as you said, it's the mindset. And once the decision is being done, boom. You can run.
Before we let you go, your message, if you have one message that you want South African government to the private sector, to residents of the cities across South Africa, what's that message?
One message only.
Okay, we'll give you two. Just they're bargains, huh? It's like, fine, you drive a hard bargain. You can take two if you like.
Okay, so first, I think that we need to remember that water is a global problem, and we need to work globally. We need to team up groups in different places with similar problems and work together in order to improve the situation and get better management schemes and the appropriate technologies. And the second one is, again, keep in mind that water is a precious commodity. It's unstable commodity, and we should treat it this way.
And that is where we leave it. I'd love your thoughts, your reaction on 061-895-1019. It is 8:57. That was Professor Noam Weisbrod. He's a professor of hydrology at the Zuckerberg Institute for Water Research at the Ben Gurion University of the Negev.